Yeah, I'm sorry that Joan wasn't able to be here, but she asked that I present in her place. She got her degree at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health as an epidemiologist. She is a newly minted PhD and is doing her postdoc at UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco. Her advisor through this work, Brian Schwartz, is also a mentor of mine, and it's a great honor to present their work, The Links Between Manured Fields and Human Health. So briefly, we're going to talk about the Geisinger health system and why it's important that we're using a health system as part of this study. The exposure model, how are people being exposed to manure, and how is that relating to disease? And then lastly, talk about some future directions for the work. So the Geisinger Health System is a hospital system in Pennsylvania. You can see from the map it covers about half of the state, the north and east part of the state. Everything in that has this boundary line and is in blue. Now, why are we talking about a health system? We're talking about manure application. Well, this health system has medical health records that they've had in existence since 2001, and this serves as the data set and the patients with which Joan conducted her EPI study. So the reason she got interested in this topic was that she's seen a growth in the number of industrial animal operations nationally. This is a photo from the Eastern Shore, a poultry house. She also sees that more and more antibiotics are being used in animal production. Currently, about 80% of the antibiotics sold in the U.S. are sold to animals. We're also seeing, the CDC has reports out, that there are over 2 million antibiotic-resistant infections each year in the U.S. Now, are these two things related? And that's what she's trying to study. There have been no prior studies in the U.S. of infections in people, antibiotic-resistant infections related to agricultural uses of the land. So how does antibiotic resistance occur? I think a lot of you already know this. There are lots of bacteria in the environment. Some of them happen to be resistant because there are already antibiotics in the soil, but not many are resistant. When antibiotics are used in animal agriculture, they kill off all the non-resistant bacteria, and those resistant bacteria grow and prosper, and then they can share their resistance. The animal industry has been using antibiotics like penicillins, terramycin, tetracycline since the 50s. It's been going on for a long, long time. Only recently with the ADUFA Act data in 2009 have we known the magnitude, the amount that's being used. It's quite startling. What is MRSA? MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Staph aureus is a bacteria that you typically find on your skin. It's not a big problem, but when you get a wound, it can get in there and get infected. And then when it's multi-drug resistant, it's just harder to treat. So from animal operations, you can see that MRSA can be selected for within, let's say, pig intestines, shed through feces into swine lagoons. If you've ever stood behind a barn fan, which I had the good fortune of doing this summer, you know, not only is it pretty stinky, but there's a lot of particulate matter that comes out of a barn fan. I was there in North Carolina this summer. It was about 95 degrees out, like 90% humidity, and just a lot of particulates and probably a lot of bacteria come out of these barn fans. Houses that are downwind are going to be exposed to that barn fan flush. Also, manure can be applied, land applied to crops to grow some of the crops that are used to raise these animals. And so the main research questions Joan and her research team had were, do livestock counts and the distance between the exposed population and livestock operations increase the odds of MRSA infections compared to a control population? And does applied manure to land and distance to crop field also increase the odds of MRSA infections compared to controls? She used this Geisinger Health system, which has about 500,000 patients, and she culled out from that patients who had MRSA infections using laboratory data and diagnostic codes from their medical health records. She had IRB approval for this work from Johns Hopkins and also from Geisinger. One important point, she classified the cases of MRSA as either hospital acquired or community acquired, and I'm going to go into what those differences are. Within each MRSA case, she found a control, which was matched by age and sex and year that the health healthcare was received. So what's the difference between healthcare-associated MRSA and community-associated MRSA? Well, healthcare-associated MRSA we typically think of as patients that go into hospitals and acquire MRSA from the hospital, typically in older patients. Community-associated MRSA is MRSA that people get in their day-to-day lives out in the community. Anything from people have swabbed computer keyboards and found MRSA in universities. They've swabbed push buttons on light posts. And you can also get it, now we know from living close to land application sites. They affect young people, healthy people. There are some risk factors for developing them, which she's listed. Now, there are two important distinctions here. There's the what type of MRSA was she looking at, and was she looking at people who were just exposed to MRSA, such as just having it in your nose, which about 1% of Americans do have it in our noses. It's much higher for farmers. No, she wasn't looking at just what people have in their noses. She was actually looking at cases of MRSA infection. These would be cases that would send you to a hospital, such that you would be recorded in the Geisinger Health System as a patient. So her first study using the Geisinger Health System data set, you can see that over time, there's a trend that hospital-acquired MRSA infections are kind of about stagnant, but there's a dramatic increase in the level of community-acquired MRSA infections over time. And that led her to wonder, where are all these community-associated cases coming from? So this little video shows you from the hospital to the farm. She's looking at how could people be exposed to MRSA? And the exposure, so there are two sides to this study. One is getting the patient data from the Geisinger Health System and matching it with the exposure data. What are people actually exposed to? Because she had these medical records, she knew where these people lived. And nearby these cases, she also mapped where were the animal production sites. Each farm in Pennsylvania has to produce a nutrient management plan. On that plan has information about heads of animals, also about land application strategies, and they also give the address. And so using the farm address, she was able to get a better sense of where the manure was being applied. So here's an example of a nutrient management plan document, she's able to see, okay, here's where a farm is actually located and confirm that with Google Maps. In cases where she was not exactly sure the address and where the lands were, the crop fields were, in Part B, you can see she took the address and she drew a circle around it of a certain area and applied that area to her model. And I'm not totally clear on the details, so I'm not going to go into more detail than that. And in some cases, she didn't have the address of the farm, so she just took either the county or the a subunit within a county and applied the manure randomly to an area within the county that was according to where cropland or pasture land or agricultural land was. She developed an exposure metric. Which was the inverse distance squared between the patient and land application sites for manure or animal operations. Let me catch up with my notes here. So this work was ultimately published in JAMA Internal Medicine, which, if you're not familiar with JAMA, is a top-tier journal in the health field, similar to a Science or Nature. So this had a big impact in our field and was picked up by the popular press and was very well known to almost everybody in our field when it came out. The main headline finding of the study was that the risk of getting MRSA was higher if you lived closer to crops that where manure was applied, or if you lived close to an animal feeding operation, which is a kind of state-of-the-art term for a place where animals are raised. And that that trend the odds of getting MRSA infections increased as you see the exposure increased. She broke out her exposure into four quartiles. So the exposure range was broken into four sets. And this is typical for epi work. And in the most exposed group, quartile four, the odds ratio for living near crop fields for getting MRSA was quite high, 1.38. And the inner quartile, or the range, did not span one, which meant it's a significant trend. And this p-value here shows that is a test that there is a trend over quartiles. So as you become more exposed, your risk for getting MRSA becomes higher. This was a very important finding for people in our community, because it was really I'll step back and just say her initial finding was that increased community-associated MRSA was going on from 2005 to 2009 in the Geisinger Health System population base. This was the first study to link MRSA infections and animal feeding operations and crop fields in the U.S. The strength of the study was there was just a huge population that they're working with. They were able to use longitudinal data, so data over time. And because it was such a big study, they could deal with a lot of the confounders, including crop field manure application. Some of the limitations were that there's a lack of genetic typing from some of the patients. So we don't know what kind of MRSA the patients had. And we couldn't go to the farm and pick out the same MRSA and show you genetically that these are the same bugs. So we only can talk in terms of associations. And there were no direct measures of the environment. It did have a big impact because it was the first health study to actually show a case of MRSA that was linked to a land application site on a population level. And in 2013, the FDA presented FDA Guidance Document 213, which was an attempt to reduce the amount of antibiotic use in livestock production, in part due to the results of this study. Now, one of the problems with this plan is that it's a voluntary plan. And I think a lot of health professionals are calling for the FDA to strengthen that stance, that voluntary is not enough to make this a binding rule. Although this movement at the federal level is very slow, we see some movement at the state level, including California, which has a new bill to reduce antibiotic use in animal production that just passed this year, and it's very exciting. At the industry level, we're seeing a lot of movement. You might hear now and again different fast food chains say they're going to stop using antibiotics in mainly poultry products. They're going to go antibiotic-free. Chipotle is a long-standing interest in this. McDonald's recently jumped in. I think Taco Bell just had a press release a couple days ago about this. So if we don't see movement on the policy front, we're going to see consumer demand for not having antibiotics used in animals and that we eat. And so all those things can contribute to lowering the antibiotic resistome in the environment and lowering our exposure to antibiotics, whether we choose to live in cities or rural areas. So there was a really great research team, folks from Johns Hopkins listed here, with Brian Schwartz pulled out as a key advisor. The Geisinger Health System in Pennsylvania was had strong support, as did New York University, and these are some colleagues of Joan's at UCSF and Berkeley. And here's the funding. So, thank you.
So we do have a couple of minutes for questions that might be a little unfair. We have two. Let's go here first. Yes.
Just a general question. What was the
maximum distance that Marathon Trust was? What were the winter conditions and duration? I'm not sure what the maximum distance. There would be a range of distances for that exposure calculation. Probably anything from other side of the state to, you know, probably next door neighbor. And the way that that distance was attributed in the study was in a quartile. So quartile one were the least exposed group, all the way to quartile four, which is the most exposed group. And I'm not sure what the exposure distance was. Wind was not considered as part of that measurement because they only had location of farm. And wind would add some temporality, and we don't really know what time, when these, you know, exposures happen. So.
Yeah, the reason I ask is that we did several experiments looking at a pond spirit that sent on them and people like others from the farm operation at the time of splitting the room to water bodies and fish produce. Staff was reported to be mindful that transported in a much longer distance. We detected up to 1,000 feet. We did not go above that.
Mm-hmm. So that's true. Bacteria can be, and viruses can transport, you know, a long distance in the air. This particular study was agnostic towards the type of exposure, whether it be food, water, air. It really didn't matter for this exposure. Those were all lumped together. So the exposure was merely distance between case and land application site or animal operation. So it really didn't matter whether it came through the air, through the soil, through the drinking water. And, you know, we don't really know how a lot of these exposures happen. But the main underlying finding was the incidence of MRSA, or these skin and soft tissue infections that are antibiotic resistant, were linked to land application of animal manure. And most likely in that animal manure was antibiotic resistant bacteria, which were shed from animals that were fed antibiotics, because most animals are fed antibiotics these days as at subtherapeutic levels. So,
so I'm going to let this other gentleman ask his question because we're almost out of time for questions.
We could talk.
Discussion at the end.
Yeah, we could talk later.
Just very briefly, animal feeding operations covers a really broad range of ground. Do you have sufficient information to sort of now begin to look at risk imposed by a certain kind of animal feeding operation? Are some more impactful than others?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't get into that level of detail. It turned out that that swine and beef cattle were the riskiest. They tried to do so they did analyses for those. Those two pulled out as risky. Dairy operations were not as risky. So those sub-analyses for dairy were not, they didn't play out to be important.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.